Can you all hear me okay now? There we go. Jobs Conference Committee will come to order. Members, this is for, you know, Senate File 1832. What we're going to do, just as a roadmap, we're going to continue finishing our policy provisions just so that we have context and information about those things. After we do that, I am making a request for and calling a meeting of the chairs and staff along with the commissioners to have just a level setting meeting and all that other good stuff and sort of map out some strategies to deal with our targets and the timelines that we've been given by leadership. And then tomorrow, just so folks know, Representative Baker is going to have the gavel tomorrow, is my understanding. And then he will let us know what time we're going to meet and or how they're going to call that meeting in light of, you know, wanting to recognize when the House is going to be in session in the Senate and just sort of navigate through timing challenges. So that is what we see right now. Any questions before I get started and before I recognize Chair Pinto, who might want to have some words? All right, Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Grateful to folks for the work yesterday and grateful to you, Mr. Chair, for the plan to continue. We've obviously gotten budget targets, and so that'll be that adds a twist to our work. I'll maybe ask if staff, Mr. Chair, if this would be okay with you. I'm assuming that staff has had the chance to pull some materials together from what we did yesterday, and then the conversation today will sort of add to that, if that's what you're thinking, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Pinto. So yeah, the whole idea is to see if we can add to that list of things that are in what I call the parking lot of potential agreement, because we have not formally adopted or accepted any of the provisions, and then we can identify those provisions that we need to put to the side or answer additional questions because they may be appropriation related. Okay, is that okay?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to move expeditiously but substantively because I know that we have some time constraints for today. So, but do not feel shy about asking questions.
And actually, Chair,
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did have some follow-up information about one of the items we discussed yesterday, which was an extension of appropriation to Ramsey County. There was a question about the yes. length of years, and I've heard from the county that the 2027 date, which I think is in the House version, and maybe we already were going to do that, I can't quite recall, but if so, just confirming that that's okay with the county. And thank you, okay. Chair.
Got you. So if that's the case, then we can look at adding that to that list of possibility. Okay. Was there another provision that you had information on, Chair Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks. I know we had spoke with Chair Baker and looked at the one about the Arrowhead Opportunity Agency. I'm not sure if we're quite ready with anything to propose on that as of yet.
Yeah, there was probably nothing because that's one that we felt we still need to have some discussion around.
And I think, Chair, the idea was to be able to meet the Senate's concern about the capital project, and there was another way to possibly get at that, but I think Chair Baker may have information.
Representative Baker.
Again, thank you, Mr. Chair. The Arrowhead provision, I think, was going to be something that Senator Draham was going to bring forward with an amendment. But I don't know, can we do that if we're not taking any action today?
No.
So I just want to know the procedure here, how we want to move forward.
So, Representative Baker, maybe what we should do about that provision is hold off on that one until we get the others here, because I know that's something that Senator Hochschild would be interested in hearing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to make sure that the others have a chance to hear it, especially because it's substantive, if that's okay.
Okay, good.
All right, with that being said, we left off yesterday at R63, and remember there are two R63s, right. But the one in particular is the second, is the Senate one that is Senate Section 15, page, 85.5. Just so that I'm clear, this is the provision, and I can be corrected by staff, but this is a provision that came from Senator Herr. And there was an allocation that we put in the 2024 appropriation, in the 2024 appropriation or bill that allowed for there to be $200,000, if my memory serves me correctly. And unfortunately, what happened is that notice wasn't given, or at least enough notice in a way that Senator Hur and others felt comfortable in order to make sure that there were folks who could respond to the RFP. And so they've asked for there to be for there to be an opportunity for Deed to reissue that RFP in a wider, much more substantive way in order to make sure that folks can be notified of it. Because it's relocation, as you can see from the notion there, it's businesses eligible for relocation grants under the 2024 appropriation. That's my understanding. City Council, is that correct, Ms. Dorfontaine? Okay. Deed, you all have anything you want to say about it? Are you okay about it, or you're fine? Okay, I see the thumbs up. Any questions on the House side that we might be able to answer? That appropriation had obviously was done in 2024. It's for $200,000. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I might ask our House staff if there's any other information they can provide to add to what Chair Champion had to say. This is not one that we talked much about. This was the relocation, exactly? What is it and where is it?
So my understanding is relocation for meat cutter plants, right? Butcher shops, right? And I know this was something, you can come forward and maybe the commissioner can certainly fill in, and I don't have to feel like, well, I know what they are, but I can phone a friend. Commissioner, identify yourself for the record and tell us a little more about the topic that is being discussed.
Chair Champion, members, thank you. I'm Commissioner Matt Verlich from Deed. What I recall from the conversations on this one is that our department did advertise and promote, including through various partners, this opportunity. Didn't get, I think, maybe any applicants, or at least no eligible applicants. And the request was for us to reissue it, but our staff's recommendation was that there wasn't time to do that in how much time we had left on the clock before the money expired, and also that it was not customary to do a reissue like that, which we want to be consistent, of course. But in this case, I think we don't have concerns if the legislature tells us that we can extend the money and do it again.
Any questions for the commissioner? Representative Baker, any questions for the commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm going to understand the request. Is the request is from the Senate to try to have this reissued, the RFP, not from Deed. What I hear Deed saying, Commissioner, was that you did your due diligence, you put it out there, you didn't get any applicants, and so you are ready to move forward. I guess I would just maybe ask the Senate then, what would be the purpose of doing this again if the first time around didn't get the results we wanted? I'm just asking, why are we going back again if we didn't get the results the first time?
Thank you for your question, Representative Baker. It's my understanding that there was some concern about not enough notice. It wasn't my provision, but Senator Hur indicated that there perhaps could have been some language barriers, the placement of where the notices were, and therefore did not get the sort of responses that they believe they would have gotten had that RFP been widely circulated. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, maybe the question to the commissioner, would you concur with that thought that maybe there was a timing issue? Was it not as much time for folks to apply for it? Did we not follow the normal protocol for this RFP?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, what I recall from our staff is that we felt good about the efforts we made to promote it, but Senator Hur, I believe, made the case that he had additional ideas for outreach that we could do, and so it would not be a fruitless effort to try again, because there would potentially be opportunity to reach folks we didn't reach the first time around.
Follow-up, Representative
Baker. Mr. Chair, are you going to be changing and tweaking the RFP process, or maybe the RFP language to have it maybe more opened up? Again, I don't want to recreate something that if the legislators last session gave you something to work with and now we have to change it again. I just assume we tried it, didn't get any takers. We take the money back in, we use it for other purposes. But again, I just want to know, because we didn't hear this on the House side. I didn't hear any of this concern, and I just want to make sure we understand why we have to do this again. If the department did follow everything they were supposed to do, why are we doing this again? I still don't understand that.
Any comments, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, I think it's mostly a matter of outreach and that there's potentially an opportunity to put the word out more widely, earlier, et cetera, and that there's a hope that that would bring forth those eligible applicants. And I think the dollar figure was not massive. What was it, 200K?
Senator Johan.
Thank you, Chair. Just trying to refresh my memory on this. Is this the one where I think there were only two qualified businesses in this area? If I remember right, is that correct, Chair?
So it's my understanding that there were a couple, maybe two or three. I'll have my CA give some additional information as well. Tom Melton.
Hi. So, Senator, I think what you are thinking of is the $6 million bucket of appropriations. I think this was a separate issue from that, if I'm recalling correctly.
Senator Graham, any follow-up question?
No, I was just trying to remember. Thank you.
All right. So committee, we could move it to the side and say not do anything on it, or if you have some thoughts about it. Senator, excuse me, why do I keep calling you Senator Baker?
Not
Representative
sure, Mr.
Baker.
Thank you. I guess I just soon, I'd like more follow-up if I could, and we'll come back to this one maybe. If we could just get some more feedback from the department, or if the Senator has more information on this, I'd love to hear it. Again, I support generally the meat packing or the meat cutting programs and things. I need to know kind of what would we do different, and why are we taking another swing at this? So I just wouldn't mind if we could get more information if we could, Mr. Chair.
We'll certainly do that. I'll have our CA, Tom Melton, contact Senator Hur and ask him to give you a call. We're now moving on to the next R63, but this is, in Section 16, bill number 85.11, but it's on, obviously, R63. This is where you see in Section 16 that it directs the revisers to change the term Small Business Growth Acceleration Program to Made in Minnesota Program in Minnesota statutes. And I believe that came from Deed. Is that correct? Or who? Enterprise Minnesota. Anyone from Enterprise Minnesota here? And while the person from Enterprise Minnesota is coming down, who will identify themselves for the record, and we will all recognize that face right there in person right there.
Mr. Chair, you don't look any different than when I served with you in the House.
That's right. That's right. And we go to the same barber, it looks like. Identify yourself for the record. That would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marty Seifert. I'm with Enterprise Minnesota. I just started representing them just a few months ago, so...
So it's that particular program that asks us to change the name to update it. Do you know anything about their rationale?
Mr. Chair, Enterprise Minnesota will stay the same under the legislation, but the program that we use to help fund training and manufacturing during the House hearing, Representative Baker, we had Hanson Silo come in. It used to be called the GAP program that filled the gap for training dollars. And we decided that a better marketing strategy was Made in Minnesota. And so Enterprise Minnesota will stay the same. It's a statutory nonprofit. Legislature has named it. We're a quasi-agency. But the main program of which we help in manufacturers will be called Made in Minnesota.
All right. Any questions for the testifier? Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Seifert. There was some discussion yesterday about this term Made in Minnesota as being something that has appeared in other places, too. So how would you address any concerns about confusion or that kind of thing?
Yep, Mr. Chairman, Representative Pinto, it's a good question. I don't think any members were senior enough to be here in the 1980s, but there was a bill in the legislature that passed in the 1980s that required the state of Minnesota purchase items made in Minnesota before other states. There was retaliatory action from other states against Minnesota, and it was repealed the next year. That was called the Made in Minnesota program at that time, and it's why it's been a controversial topic, but we don't believe that this is controversial in the sense of naming it that way. But that was maybe what you heard, a little residual background from that. Representative Kahn, Representative Mary Murphy were the two that told me about that. And sometimes that's why term limits aren't always a good idea, because those senior members can remind us why bad ideas sometimes come around every 30 or 40 years. So that was the residual bad appetite on Made for Minnesota. Made in Minnesota.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I heard actually was less that it was a problematic term for anybody to use and more that it was a term that folks thought has been used in other contexts or is being currently used in other contexts. I just did a quick look and only found, I think there was like a store, I don't know if there's, but that seemed to be the discussion yesterday that it's actually being used by other in other contexts. Wouldn't necessarily prevent you all from using it as well, but I think there was the confusion more than anything else that the concern was.
Okay, that's a good point, Mr. Chair. We didn't know of any others when we decided to do it.
And then final thing, if I can.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then final thing is just to confirm, so this small business, the thing that's currently called the Small Business Growth Acceleration Program is run by Enterprise Minnesota. It's unique to Enterprise Minnesota. And so basically, if I'm right about that, that you're saying, hey, this program that we run, we'd like to change the name of that program that we run. We think it'll work better with this name.
To testify.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Pinto, we would like to do that. Because we're a statutory nonprofit, we are charged in statute to do the things we do. So we do need legislative permission to do this. We can't just do it on our own.
Okay, good. All right, thank you, Chair.
Any other questions? Any other questions for the testifier? Any thoughts as to what we would like to do about it? Representative Baker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I don't see any need to hold this up. I support the amendment, suggestion here from the Senate. I can certainly accept that on our behalf, Mr. Chair.
All right, and that'll be put, and we'll ask staff to put that in the appropriate bucket. Now we'll go to the next one, R64. This repeals, so if you go to R64, House 21, Section 21, I should say, and it has the 95.16, which you'll see listed as a repealer. What it does is it repeals two expensive mandatory reports of limited usefulness. I'm going to ask someone from DEED to come up and talk about this repealer and what it does and whether there's another option that's available to get this useful information. So identify yourself for the record and tell us about this repealer and these two expensive mandatory reports of limited usefulness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Devin Bowdry, Government Relations Director at DEED. Let's see what I've learned about these reports here. So we are proposing to sunset or repeal both of these reports because we feel they're wasteful and duplicative with information we already provide to the committee. One of these reports is submitted every 4 years, and the other is submitted every 2 years, and we have ways of communicating information to you all much faster and in a much cleaner, cheaper way, one of them being the report statute that we discussed yesterday regarding the hospitality appropriation. That's 116L.98. That is our uniform report card. It has the 16 different metrics of workforce reporting. It's got wages, tracking, you know, a year, 2 years out. It's got demographics. It's got all of that. And that all lives on our external website on a colorful, easy-to-use dashboard. And that is what we would prefer as opposed to these reports that we see are duplicative and expensive.
And I know from our side that Senator Dreheim often talks about these reports, so I'm going to turn to Senator Dreheim and get his thoughts about it.
Thank you, Chair. You know, my biggest concern is that the public has access to reports. So, you know, that by getting rid of them, will the public still be able to access them online, or are they going to phase out in a year or two? So that's my only concern, is that we should be more transparent and make sure the average person has access to it too. And I think by putting it in a report, it's easier to find and easier to communicate. But if it's online and it plans to stay online, then I'm okay with it. So I don't know if we need comfort language there or what, but that's just my opinion. Thank you.
Mr. Baldry, so you heard Senator Draham's concerns. I know that you've talked about that is provided in other reports, namely the online, but his issue is transparency and access. So can you, not guarantee, but can you say with some degree of confidence that that no information will be hidden from the public, that these reports currently provide information around? Mr. Baldry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Draham, I believe we will, I mean, we can keep these reports, their most recent versions on the website for a period of time. We try to clean them out just to make sure that we have our most active reports living on our external page, but I believe you can access them through the Legislative Reference Library and go back any number of years.
Chair.
And Senator Draham, and remember, we do have a report in our bill as well, but any additional follow-up?
I guess I misunderstood Devin there. I thought that they were already putting the data online, not just the report. And if we do away with the report, we won't have the transparency that I desire.
So Mr. Baldry, are you all putting the data online as well?
Mr. Chair, Senator Draham, the data, I mean, we have data that we update more frequently under a different report, and that's the report that we believe suffices as opposed to the two that we are proposing to repeal. And the 116L, the report card data, has its own page on the website, and then we also have a separate page that has all of our other mandatory reports. So that will still live.
Senator Draham.
Thank you, Chair. I guess as long as there's data out there that the general public can access, that's my biggest concern. Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Yeah, I think, too, just to Mr. Chair, what we heard in our side of things from our nonpartisan research, and maybe I'll have Ms. Shalene just copy on this or comment on this, is it was nothing that is not available in other reports. This was a duplicative. We're not taking any information away from the public. We thought that this was really just an expensive way to deliver things we're already delivering. If Ms. Shalene wanted maybe just to confirm that for me, but she was very convincing to us that evening, late evening, if I don't remember, with the department too. I think it made a lot of sense to do this, but I'd like her to explain that. Thank you.
Ms. Shalene.
Chair and members, so one of the reports, it is reporting the information. So DEED does annual program summaries that give all the metrics on the programs. One of these reports we're getting rid of or proposing to get rid of does the same information, but every 2 years. So the information is all already being produced in the one-year reports, and we don't really need the second to do a second version of it. For the other one, it is quite expensive study that we pay an outside economist to do, but all it establishes is that in general, all workforce programs for adults together are more effective than doing nothing. It's a very good thing to, you know, academically to establish that that is true, but it's not necessarily something the chairs were interested in paying to produce every 4 years. I was told the estimates for the next report were, Deed could speak about that.
Any other follow-ups? Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair. And just to build on what Ms. Shalene said to Senator Draham and others, it was our understanding these reports are pretty expensive, and it's multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars. We had thought that eliminating this requirement would then save us that money, but it turns out because the reports have not actually been, because they're future reports, they're not built into the forecast. So the point is, if we don't repeal this, we will face several hundred thousand dollars in additional cost to discover that, in fact, it is better to have a workforce program than not to have one, and to have our reports that are reporting annually, anyway, to the stuff that she said. So this is a cost to doing this if we don't repeal these reports.
Any other questions from the committee about this provision? Senator Draham, are you okay with this provision? All right. It appears that we would direct staff to put this in our pile of those things that are okay. All right, now we'll go to R67, which is a Senate-only provision which is to modify the Can Start Up loan program by increasing the maximum state contribution to a loan and making other administrative clarifications. And that is on R67, sections 1 and 2 at 89.3. Is this Ms. Johnson? Are you hiding in the back from MCCD? So if you can come and talk to us about that provision and what you're thinking and why the changes, and then you will field questions. State your name for the record and go forward.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Champion. My name is Carrie Johnson. I'm the Director of State Policy and Field Building at the Minnesota Consortium of Community Developers. And this policy change is something that we were advocating for this session, and I believe Deed has no objections to the changes. We actually worked on them with worked with Deed on some of the changes as well. So when the program was originally drafted in the larger cannabis omnibus bill in, I believe, 2023, this program was originally drafted as a grant program. And then wasn't necessarily, everything wasn't changed over to make it a proper loan program. And there also wasn't consultation with organizations that do small business lending that would ultimately apply for these programs in the competitive RFP. And so we went through and made some suggestions, including increasing the loan cap amounts from $50,000 to $75,000, or with us, if there's a match, increase it from $150,000 to $200,000. And then also to kind of put in, because right now it says that the cannabis microbusiness that receives a loan may apply to renew annually, and that is very costly and time-consuming to do an annual renewal for a loan. So those are the provisions there. And then in committee, I know we did add an amendment to clarify the interest rate or fee equivalent for the loan interest rate amount, and just some other technical changes as well. But happy to answer any questions.
And I recognize that this is tied to appropriations and that sort of thing, but want to get any questions answered from Ms. Johnson. Any questions? Senator Drahan.
Thank you. And I first started off with a statement, I guess. And, you know, I know on another part in the bill, we agreed to lower the threshold for maximum, and here we're raising it. And at the same time, I just had a gentleman come up from one of my counties concerned about all the cuts and shifts that we're doing to counties. And I have a problem with expanding our loan program for more dollars when we're shifting such a big expense onto our local counties and our long-term care facilities, et cetera. If anything, we should be lowering these limits in tight economic times, not raising them, is my opinion. And the maximum number of loans, I would put at one if their money's tight. And I know not everybody will probably have that same thought, but I just thought I'd share my
Thank you, Chair. I guess one clarification, as I understand this, this would not in any way change the total amount of money that would go out under the Can Startup program. I know folks have different feelings about cannabis and about the program, but I think both sides of the budget, or both House and Senate, are assuming ongoing funding for the program, and I think this is just to make it work better. But I do, Senator Drahan, just want to confirm, this would not, as I understand it, maybe the testifier can confirm this, this wouldn't cause there to be more money in the program overall, and maybe the testifier could just talk about why it is, in fact, necessary, because as Senator Drahan points out, we had a separate area, we lowered some limits, why the need? And I'll just say I had heard that this will make the program work better again without changing the total amount that goes on under it, but if you could provide some background.
Ms. Johnson, if you can answer those two questions.
Yes, absolutely, Chair Champion, Chair Pinto, and Senator Drahan. So, you know, we, as you know, we were looking into see if whether or not we could be a lender for this program. In discussions with other community banks and partners, had some concerns that the maximum loan amounts would not be sufficient to meet the needs of these particular businesses, given the need for increased insurance and security, and product is more expensive. And so wanted to make sure that we had more funds available to actually make sure the businesses can succeed. If we lower the amount, I'm not sure that many businesses would actually be able to get sufficient funds in order to actually operate as well as they could. And then I just want to state also, I know there is funding tied to this program, and I have emailed all of the chairs. Because it is a revolving loan fund, I have asked or suggested that we are okay with the ongoing funding being cut by $4 million to just have $2 million in this program, because it is a revolving loan fund. So.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm realizing, actually, Senator Dreheim, to your point about that other change we made, I would argue this is actually consistent with that, and that in that case, there's a minimum and maximum. We lowered the minimum for the community wealth building program. In this case, we are expanding the maximum. But in both cases, we're just making the programs apply to a larger range of businesses. So in the prior one, we lowered the minimum. This one, we're increasing the maximum. But it's I guess I would argue that it is actually consistent in allowing a greater variety of enterprises to benefit from these programs, if that makes sense, something to consider.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson, is the reason the community banks are having a hard time working this program because they're not backed by federal insurance with the loans because of the cannabis being a controlled subject.
Ms. Johnson, to the question.
Thank you, Chair Champion and Senator Dreheim. We actually have found that some smaller community banks are able to and willing to do some lending. There are three particular banks that I have heard of, Park Street Bank up in Senator Housechild's district, but they are located throughout the state, Stearns Bank, located in Stearns County, and then Union Bank in Minneapolis. So it is a business decision for those banks as well to make that decision, but they are community banks, so they have different regulations than, say, the larger banking industry.
Any follow-up? Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair. And my only other follow-up is, why is there a need for two loan programs? A maximum. So on line 89.24, we're adding language, have a maximum of two program loans.
Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Champion, Senator Dreheim. So this is if there is the need as they're growing, if there is need for another additional loan, say maybe 4 years down the road, they are eligible to receive another loan. And this is language we did work on with Deed.
Any other questions?
I have one more statement. If I could.
Senator Dreheim.
I just find it ironic that we're doing this at a time where we're putting pressure on our counties and our long-term care facilities, and just had to listen to a press conference that told me that our bills are our moral compass, and now we're doing this. So I oppose this language, and I think we should.
And just so that folks know that we haven't agreed to do anything at this particular point, this is a Senate provision, by the way, and we want to make sure that we've had a chance to flesh it out again. Any other questions before we go to the next provision? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this. I think I find the concern that I have as well more so is about you're really cutting the private contributions in half to 25% versus 50%. Again, I wasn't real keen on the whole idea of this bill anyway to begin with, and this is going to be a risky business for whoever wants to get into it. I know that the state's trying to do everything to make it easy to get into it. Why did the language change now, do you think, after the original launch of the CAN startup program from the 50 to 25%? What do you think what happened in the meantime to make this go down?
Thank you, Chair Champion and Chair Baker. This was in conversations with folks interested in starting these businesses, and again, just knowing that there's minimal additional private financing available to match to lower that amount, but open to discussions if that is not sufficient.
Representative Baker.
Just again, this is part of getting the bill right from the get-go, and I would have assumed that those would have been kind of vetted before the bill would have passed. And these are the kind of things that we're understanding now after it's really not out there yet. It's not in law. We're moving this thing forward. But it's when we write a bill out of the gate, we got to make sure that we get it right. So I have issues, and I know we're not deciding things today, Mr. Chair, but I do have issues with this as well. So thank you.
So we'll put this provision off to the side and come back to it some other time. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. We really appreciate you. For staff, the R68, didn't we go through that already? Was that the one where there's no? Okay, got it. All right, so we're going to look at R68, 1 through 6. And specifically at 90.27, that's where it starts. And Ms. Delafontaine, will you go through the change provisions there or the clarifications to the Promise Act?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members. I think I discussed this briefly yesterday when we talked about the 2023 appropriations language, and kind of mentioned that was separate from this article that just contains the Promise Act sort of administrative grant and loan provisions. And what is incorporated here were some suggestions, some administrative fixes and things that would make the program run more smoothly for the various organizations that were administering these programs, including NDC, also some feedback from DEED, and then some feedback from the Minnesota Initiative Foundation. So those were incorporated here. The NDC changes you'll see are to the grant program, the Promise Grant Program. Some of the language that was tightened up a bit, it regards the prior taxable year. Previously, they had to have submit their 2021 tax return, and now this would allow them to submit the prior taxable year instead of tying it to the 2021. And then there were some other loan limitations and some language on 91.19. This is regarding a tightening up regarding whether or not the business is their residence and they're doing the business out of their residence, whether it was eligible for a tax deduction or if it was more of a bricks and mortar, sort of a physical presence for the business within the specific corridors that are specified in the appropriations. So that's basically the gist of it. I could go through more line by line. That's also in my summary for the Senate bill. But basically, these were some administrative and technical changes that these organizations felt would make the second round of the Promise Act grants and loans go out more easily to the people they were trying, that it was intended to go to. So we can go through other specific questions, though, or maybe those individuals are here to talk about the reasons for the changes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And just so that the committee knows, the Promise Act resources all across the state. That's why, number one, the Minnesota Initiative Foundation, because we know that there's six of those all throughout, as well as NDC that has relationships all throughout, both in the suburbs, northern Minnesota, but also in the metropolitan area. But the whole idea is that we wanted to make sure that we were hearing feedback from everyone. And so over the summer months, we followed up and said, what are the things that could make it go better? And what are things? And so those are just their technical administrative requests that we put in that in this area. Any questions about it, Chair Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Were these carried in a bill, do you know? Or do you know sort of where they ended up coming from or being carried? If I can ask.
Yeah, we had them come in and testify, and then we put it all a part of our bill.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And they all testified. Representative Baker.
Thank you. I think, again, too, this is very helpful. I appreciate the language changes. I know our tour of NDC was really helpful to hear them directly saying that The language that was being done really limited them to some of the loans and the support they wanted to do so. And I believe we did get a letter from them or an email from them saying this language is good. Mm-hmm. So again, with that, I'm good with this language to help change those to make that available. So it looks good on my end too. So okay. Our end, thank you.
We'll instruct staff to add that to our bucket. Okay. We will now go to the last provision, R-74, which is a Senate-only provision. If you look on R-74, you will see that it modifies the definition of available for suitable employment to allow an applicant to conduct work. A work search remotely without disqualification. This came from Senator Latz and was also supported by Senator Dreheim. There was discussion about if someone is making themselves available for work that they could do, they could conduct that work if they needed to remotely without disqualification, because I guess there was some concern about folks who were searching online and looking other places that they were not being given credit for searching for work. And so that's what this provision is all about. Senator Dreheim, is there anything that you would like to say about that before we field any questions?
No, I just want to speak in favor of it, obviously, and I think it's just updating our standards a little bit to the modern-day workforce. So that's it.
Any questions from the House? Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I might ask to just get input from the agency, if we can, on this one, just to see what they would have to say.
Sounds good. They are approaching the table now. State your name for the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Devin Bowdry, Government Relations Director at DEED. You know, we understand the intent of what the original author is trying to do, and we already administer the program in such a way that his intent is met. And in speaking with the unemployment insurance team, they did not feel comfortable with the language as worded. They would advise that we take this. If you want comfort language, and feel that the statute needs to be updated to reflect that intent, that we take this to the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council and discuss it there. In particular, you know, unemployment insurance is a big program with a lot of federal oversight, and that's not something that we really want to put at risk by tinkering with the language in this way. So they had administration concerns, and we already administer the program to allow for remote work search. So. It's met.
And Chair Pinto, one of the things that was of concern is that Senator Last came and talked about one of his constituents and others who, in fact, was impacted by this lack of clarity. And so even if they're doing it, perhaps clarification in the statute to update it, that would just make it real clear. And it's my understanding that the council that you're referring to meets at certain times. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, meets at certain times. I have heard that they are hoping to meet over the summer. Usually they meet early in the year.
And so with that being said, that council hasn't met yet. We're not sure when they're going to meet, but we at the Senate thinks this comfort language and this updating language is important. Chair Pinto, did you have a follow-up?
Maybe no. I think maybe Chair Baker has something he's going to ask or say. I may have a follow-up after that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Again, I think as an employer myself, what I don't want to see, and I want to maybe just, I need to process this a little bit more, I think, just to understand it better. But right now, unemployment insurance applicants, it's getting to be a bit of a gray area, how much they're really, really looking for work, and if they're doing it online, and if it's just We're as an employer, I see firsthand this needs to be very, very carefully looked at. So I just want to make sure that we look at what this means, available for suitable employment. They do need to be in person and available for in-person interviews. I'm concerned that is the agency following up to see if you're on unemployment? Are you actually looking for work? Are you doing what you're supposed to be doing? I want to make sure before we approve anything here that I've had a chance to sort of share this with my team and understand it better. So I guess, again, open to this. I just want to make sure that I dive into it a little bit further if we could.
Right? And so with that being said, Representative Baker, we'll put it to the side, but I'll also ask Tom Milton to have Senator Latz give you a call as well, and you can also follow with the department so that you feel like you have all the information that you need. We now proceed to R75, which is a Senate-only provision, and you will see that it's Section 5, line 97.26. And that's where it starts. But the whole idea is that this came from Senator Claire Umuver-Baton, and this is just around that the penalty is the greater of 500 or 100% of the following resulting from the employer's action. So there was a desire to change that from 50% to 100%. Maybe Senate Counsel can also make certain that I am explaining that accurately. Representative Greenman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was Senator Umuver-Baton's in the Senate. It was my provision in the House, and I think it's half of the provision, but for folks who, and I'm glad the agency's there, what this is about employers in the UI system, employers who, and if you read the language, make false statements without good faith, or knowingly fail to disclose materials in order to give UI to folks who are not entitled to it, or prevent or avoid paying UI to folks who are eligible. All this does, and I think one of the things that the reason that this is in this is that in the misclassification task force, one of the things the OLA said was that specifically indeed is that basically because of the penalty structures which haven't been updated and because of the way that the language is written, when folks are found to have misclassified workers, basically what they have to do is pay back the resources that they should have already paid, and there was a need to increase penalties. This is only half of the provision, but this half seems just intuitive to take on the issue, not just of misclassification fraud, which is the C, but also the issue of defrauding UI if folks are not eligible and collect benefits. And I'm interested in what the department has to say about your position on this.
Any additional questions about this provision and or what you all think about it? So did
she's asking for the department.
And I know that she wants the department, but I want to make sure that you guys are teed up. Department, so Mr. Baldry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenman, we're not in opposition. We're neutral on this. This is language that we can administer. No problem.
Representative Greenman, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think that the House has spent a lot of time thinking about the issues of protecting the government benefits and protecting folks who want to defraud our system. This is a relatively small provision that would just say we're going to ensure that 100% as a penalty, 100% of what they deprived the amounts of unemployment insurance or the amounts that had been unlawfully paid out are part of the penalty structure. So not sure where other folks are at, but it's a Senate provision that I hope the House takes.
Any other comments? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I don't mind having the penalties. Again, right now, the penalty is $500 or 50%, whichever is greater, if I understand that right. And we're changing it to possibly 100. What also happens, though, is when an employee is fraudulent and gets caught, what is their penalty for the employee? Typically, what it is they have to pay it back with an interest. So I just want to make sure that as we talk about this issue, I'm uncomfortable doing anything more punitive to businesses in the state of Minnesota. I want to catch bad people if they're defrauding us and doing this, but I think a 50% penalty already is pretty stiff. But I also want to know, are we treating the employers as equally or, you know, as an employee that is knowingly taking unemployment insurance when they're actually working? And I think that I've seen things on the side where employees are not certainly being held to the same level. And if we want to level set a lot of these conversations around here, I want to at least make sure things are being talked about on both sides of this too. So I guess right now I've got concerns about this. This is maybe why the House didn't have a position, because I didn't want to maybe bring more penalties to this. this side of things. So I guess I've got concerns with this, Mr. Chair.
So we will set it to the side because sure. My understanding that this provision seems to be about, like, for an example, if you owe me $100 and you don't give me the $100, that, you know, then when you get caught, that you don't have to give me my $100 somehow, right? But like 50% of it. But anyway, the bottom line is we will put it to the side, and hopefully that we can have some additional conversation about it later. With that being said, we're going to R76. Yeah, the labor is right there. Okay, so R76, this is a Senate-only provision, and this is Senator Hochschild's provision that's in our bill. If you look at R76, so we'll make sure that you have that information in front of you, Section 6. And this has to do with unemployment insurance extending additional 26 weeks of unemployment benefits for those folks who are laid off on the iron range. So I'm going to let Senator Hochschild speak to this R76.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. Yes, as many of you know, we had 630 steelworkers laid off at the Minorca and Hibtac mines. This is a really difficult circumstance. These particular layoffs and shutdowns of these mines appear to be for a longer term. And so we want to make sure on the Iron Range that we keep our steelworkers in our communities so that their families stay, our schools stay full. And the impact of this type of closure on the range is the equivalent of a Target and Best Buy closing in the Twin Cities. It's a very, very substantial hit on our economy. These are some of the working class jobs that we really rely on the Iron Range. Mr. Chair, I appreciate your support as Chair of Jobs, both for this bill as well as in 2023 when we provided an extension in unemployment for the workers at North Shore in my district, and hopeful that we can get agreement to pass this provision on and take the Senate position.
And Representative.
Thank you, Chair, and I concur with Senator Hochschild. This is an essential component that we have for the miners in northern Minnesota. And we have a lot going on up there. We've had tough winters. We have fires raging right now. And they need the security to know that they're going to have this unemployment secured. If they don't, then the issue is not just the miners, it's their significant other that leaves our region. And it compromises our critical access hospital staffing, our ambulance staffing, all the schools, the entire infrastructure is compromised for northern Minnesota. So I urge us to take action on this and support this. Thank you.
And it's my understanding that the House has a similar provision that was in a standalone bill. And so we took action in our bill this particular way. I recognize that it's a fiscal issue because, you know, there has to be some money for it. And so I'm open to hearing if we want to put it over in the pile of some agreement, but we recognize that we're going to have to deal with this in real time or what. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I appreciate both Senator and Representative to talk about this important issue. I think we just want to make sure that when we have a full complement of members here, that we also look at the spin-off businesses so they're not negatively affected by the UI experience rating as well. So, I mean, again, I highly support this move to help our Iron Range folks that are in a really, really bad place. I know a lot of the Rangers have been working on this, our members, and so I really appreciate that work a lot. I just want to make sure we put it on the side, Mr. Chair, and then we'll bring hopefully the other tweak to this to get it so that it doesn't affect the other spin-off businesses that are also affected.
All right.
So thank you.
We'll put this to the side for a discussion, so when we have the full complement of others here, and then we will look to take action at that time. That would also provide us an opportunity to deal with our targets, because we do have our targets, and to start having that important discussion. With that being stated, that ends the jobs portion of things. I did not want to go forward and do the labor portions without our labor lead, Senator McEwen, here. And so I naturally assume that that'll be something that we'll do tomorrow, especially if there, if there's a desire to, you know, come back and for Senator McEwen to join us, because I know she's at other meetings and dealing with some other things today. And Representative Baker will be the one who will have the gavel tomorrow. But the other request I'm asking is for all chairs and staff, namely, you know, Senate Counsel, fiscal staff, and then, of course, CAs and that sort of stuff, gather with me in conference room 3414 immediately following this, following adjournment. I also recognize that Representative Baker has a time element, so the sooner that we can get up there, and I would also like commissioners to join us. So I know that sometimes people like to gather and talk and do all that other good stuff, but we will adjourn the committee, those folks that I just talked about, for us to go to 3414. Senator Dreheim, did you have a question?
I just had an amendment that I think we'll just share with the committee, the conference committee, for next time. I just wanted to know how you wanted to handle suggestions moving forward.
So, Senator Dreheim, maybe it might be best for tomorrow when we have everyone else here, so that your thoughts will at least, you know, be entertained by everyone, so that you're not missing anyone, if that's okay.
That's great. I think Representative Pinto will be chairing tomorrow, and I don't know how you do it on the House, or Senator Baker, Representative Baker. See, I'm doing it too. Sorry. How do you normally handle amendments for committees? Do you guys have any rules ahead of time, or just...
Mr. Chair, if I may, just again, tomorrow, I guess I was just going to kind of set it up a little bit. I think we're still on for 1 o'clock tomorrow to convene. Again, we know right now things are very fluid in this area. I'm hoping that tomorrow is a very productive day for us after a good afternoon of conversations. I would welcome any amendments tomorrow to those kind of things if they're relevant to what we're dealing with. Again, you know, talking with our current chairs. So I am hoping to do some adoptions if we have a full team here to get things moving along. I haven't officially heard about a time requested we want to be done with. I've heard it from secondhand folks, but I want to make sure I hear it from my leadership as well. But I know that we are very committed to getting our work done on time. So I'm working on that, but I do expect a pretty active and fast-paced meeting tomorrow. So let's work towards that, and I just appreciate, hopefully we'll have everybody here. Thank you. So bring your amendments.
Chair Pinto, any last minute?
Yeah, just go quick things. I would ask Senator Dreheim, I would be eager to hear, to have you to receive any kind of amendment or language suggestion you have. You can send out even in advance. Consistent with that, I'll just urge even folks watching this, if there's anything even that we've had an informal agreement on, if folks have input, things are moving very quickly. So we're eager to receive that. The final thing is, I believe that we're in the middle of a weather situation, so folks are not, maybe even inside of a tornado warning. So just sort of if folks are heading out, just to be aware of that, maybe check your phones. It seems like that is happening right now, exactly where we are.
And not only is he a brilliant policy mind, he's a weatherman as well. You know I'm messing with you. All right, come on, you got to be able to have a little levity.
No, okay.
Members, just so that you know that there's letters and testimony received about the members, just for one last second. There's letters and testimonies received that were sent to the conference committee. Thank you to Travis for being so thoughtful to, you know, copy those things. This will give you a chance to see what information that we've received thus far. You have letters from Big Brothers Big Sisters, Finishing Trades Institute, City of Burnsville, American Indian OIC, just a coalition, a cross-section of letters. Okay, with that being said, the Jobs Conference Committee is adjourned, and now I expect to see the others up in conference room 3414. Thank you.